Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you a story, and John Russell and Jill Robbins will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, we begin with a story from Afghanistan.
Hamid Rafi says he will never forget the day he got to speak about the suicide bombing that killed his 18-year-old sister. He shared his story in March as part of a panel discussion at the Afghanistan Center for Memory and Dialogue. All of those wounded in the attack were taken to hospitals in and around Kabul, Rafi told people attending the discussion. He first began searching lists of the wounded that hung on hospital walls. But he could not find his sister's name, Raila. Then a doctor suggested Rafi also search lists of those killed. "That shocked me," he said. "I had never considered that my sister wouldn't be alive anymore." As he later learned, Raila had died in the attack. She was studying in an education center for her college entrance exam when the bomb exploded.
Rafi's chance to share his story is at the heart of the Memory Center's mission. The center was launched in February and is a project of the Afghanistan Human Rights and Democracy Organization. It seeks to protect and share memories and stories of civilian victims of the country's 40 years of war. The center is in the lower level of a rented house in West Kabul. Special exhibits remind visitors of the years of destruction and loss. On display are clothes and pictures, along with personal information about victims, such as their names and the causes of their death or injury. But the center is also a safe space for family and friends of civilian victims like Rafi, who can share their stories and keep the memories of their loved ones. Afghanistan has experienced 40 years of continuous wars. The center has divided the conflict into periods. It starts with the former communist administration from 1978 to 1992, which led to the 1979 invasion by Soviet forces to support the government. That period was followed by the civil war in the Islamic State of Afghanistan, which lasted from 1992 to 1996. During these years, competing militias fought against each other for power. In Kabul alone, 50,000 people died. Many of the leaders of those militias were returned to power by the international community in 2001. The Taliban ruled the country from 1996 to 2001. The years from 2002 to present day represent the current period that followed the collapse of Taliban rule.
More than 2 million Afghan civilians are estimated to have died in the fighting between 1978 and 2001. Thousands more have been killed or hurt over the past 17 years since the United States-led NATO intervention. The memory center grew from the idea of memory boxes. Family members would take favorite possessions of victims and put them in boxes of different sizes and materials. As family members met other victims' family and friends, they began to exchange stories. The center later asked survivors to write letters to their lost loved ones and to the larger Afghan community to let people know about their pain. This took place over about 8 years. During that time, hundreds of memory boxes were created. They held more than 4,000 personal objects and stories. Visitors see in one exhibit a Barbie doll and a makeup table. These playthings belonged to a young girl named Saima. She was killed in a suicide car bombing near the former Parliament building in April 2015. In another area, a wristwatch still shows the time for visitors, but not its owner, who is unidentified. The watch belonged to the victim of a suicide bombing attack in Kabul that killed and wounded many. Center organizers were unsure of the date of that attack. Unfortunately, in Afghanistan, there was not a policy of remembrance for thousands of war victims, said Hadi Marifat, the human rights organization's director. He said the center serves as a place for survivors and victims' families to come share their stories and to get acknowledgement, which is important in a context like Afghanistan.
Rafi's sister was one of 50 students killed in the Islamic State group's suicide attack on the Mawood Educational Center in western Kabul. When Rafi returned home after Raila's burial, he went through her diary. He discovered her love for books and education. In one of her diary entries, Raila wrote that education is the only way out of the crisis in Afghanistan. After reading his sister's writings, Rafi decided to open a library in West Kabul, not far from where Raila lost her life. The Raila Library has more than 7,000 books with a separate reading space for visitors. So far, more than 4,000 people have visited the library since it opened last October. Rafi said, "We lost Raila, but we hope Raila's name and kindness will be remembered by people through this library."
The Terminator movies, featuring actor Arnold Schwarzenegger, have been some of the most popular films ever made. They tell the story of a resistance leader and the robots sent from the future to kill him. They can also offer a lesson about English grammar. Listen to this line from Terminator 2. Judgment Day.
The first Terminator was programmed to strike at me in the year 1984, before John was born. It failed.
Today, we are going to examine that statement as an example of the passive voice. We will also show you how you can use direct and indirect objects with the passive voice. First, let's talk about some definitions.
English speakers use the passive voice for two main reasons. First, they might not know who did an action. Second, they might not think telling who did an action is important. At the beginning of this report, you heard the following line in the passive voice.
The first Terminator was programmed to strike at me in the year 1984, before John was born. It failed.
Why did the speaker use the passive voice? Because the person doing the action was unknown. In other words, no one knows the person or machine who programmed the Terminator. In addition, that information might not be important. What is important is that the Terminator is now on a mission. If the statement were in the active voice, it would be,
someone programmed the first Terminator to strike at me in the year 1984, before John was born.
Betty Azar, a grammar expert, notes that English speakers generally use only transitive verbs, or verbs followed by an object, in the passive voice. English speakers do not generally use intransitive verbs, verbs that do not take an object, in the passive voice. What are objects, you might ask? In grammar, we talk about direct objects and indirect objects. The direct object receives the verb's action. The indirect object identifies the person who received the action. Here is an example using James Cameron, who directed the first Terminator movie. You could say, the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films gave James Cameron an award. That sentence is in the active voice. The Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films is the subject, and gave is the verb. The direct object is an award, and the indirect object is James Cameron. But let's say you do not know who gave James Cameron the award. How could you use the passive voice to change the sentence? Here are two options. You could make the direct object the subject and say, an award was given to James Cameron. Or you could make the indirect object the subject and say, James Cameron was given an award. In other words, either the direct object or indirect object can take the subject position in a passive voice sentence. Here is another example using the statement you heard at the beginning of the report. In the active voice, it might sound something like this.
Someone gave the Terminator an order.
An order is the direct object, and the Terminator is the indirect object. In the passive voice, the indirect object can come first, as in, the Terminator was given an order, or the indirect object can come second, as in, the order was given to the Terminator.
Today, we explored the passive voice and both direct and indirect objects. We showed you that both kinds of objects could be the subject in a passive sentence. The next time you are watching films or reading, try to find examples of the passive voice. Ask yourself if the examples you find fit into the patterns we talked about today. Try to identify the direct and indirect objects. Be sure to record what you find and make note of questions that you have. With time and practice, you will soon be able to identify the passive voice with ease. A word of caution, however. you should be careful about using the passive voice in your own writing and speaking. While the passive voice is useful, English speakers often prefer reading and listening to sentences in the active voice. English speakers consider active voice sentences to be clearer. The passive voice is like a sharp kitchen knife. It is a very useful tool, but one that should be used with great care. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. The stock market crash of 1929 marked the beginning of the worst economic crisis in American history. Millions of people lost their jobs. Thousands lost their homes. During the next several years, a large part of the richest nation on earth learned what it meant to be poor. Workers lost their jobs as factories closed. Business owners lost their stores and sometimes their homes. Farmers lost their land as they struggled with falling prices and natural disasters. And Americans were not the only ones who suffered.
One of America's greatest writers, John Steinbeck, described the Depression this way. It was a terrible, troubled time. I can't think of any 10 years in history when so much happened in so many directions. Violent change took place. Our country was shaped. Our lives changed. Our government rebuilt. Steinbeck, winner of the 1962 Nobel Prize in Literature, said, "When the market fell, the factories, mines, and steelworks closed, and then no one could buy anything, not even food."
An unemployed auto worker in Detroit, Michigan, described the situation this way. "Before daylight, we were on the way to the Chevrolet factory to look for work. The police were already there, waving us away from the office. They were saying, 'Nothing doing, no jobs, no jobs.' So now we were walking slowly through the falling snow to the employment office for the Dodge Auto Company. A big, well-fed man in a heavy overcoat stood at the door. 'No, no,' he said. 'There was no work.' One Texas farmer lost his farm and moved his family to California to look for work. 'We can't send the children to school,' he said, 'because they have no clothes.'
My hours are slumberless. Dearest, the shadows I live with are numberless. Little white flowers will never awaken you. Not where the black coach of sorrow has taken you."
The economic crisis began with the stock market crash in October 1929. For the first year, the economy fell very slowly, but it dropped sharply in 1931 and 1932. And by the end of 1932, the economy collapsed almost completely. During the 3 years following the stock market crash, the value of goods and services produced in America fell by almost half. The wealth of the average American dropped to a level lower than it had been 25 years earlier. All the gains of the 1920s were washed away. Unemployment rose sharply. The number of workers looking for a job jumped from 3% to more than 25% in just 4 years. One of every three or four workers was looking for a job in 1932.
Those employment numbers did not include farmers. The men and women who grew the nation's food suffered terribly during the Great Depression. This was especially true in two states, Oklahoma and Texas. Farmers there were losing money because of falling prices for their crops. Then natural disasters struck. Year after year, little or no rain fell. The ground dried up, and then the wind blew away the earth in huge clouds of dust. All that dust made some of the farmers leave, one Oklahoma farmer remembered later. But my family stayed. We fought to live. Despite all the dust and the wind, we were planting seeds. But we got no crops. We had five crop failures in 5 years.
Falling production, rising unemployment, men begging in the streets. But there was more to the Great Depression. At that time, the federal government did not guarantee the money that people put in banks. When people could not repay loans, banks began to close. In 1929, 659 banks with total holdings of $200 million went out of business. The next year, two times that number failed. And the year after that, almost twice that number of banks went out of business. Millions of people lost all their savings. They had no money left.
The Depression caused serious public health problems. Hospitals across the country were filled with sick people whose main illness was a lack of food. The health department in New York City found that one of every five of the city's children did not get enough food. 99% of the children attending a school in a coal mining area of the country reportedly were underweight. In some places, people died of hunger. The quality of housing also fell. Families were forced to crowd into small houses or apartments to share costs. Many people had no homes at all. They slept on public streets, buses, or trains. One official in Chicago reported in 1931 that several hundred women without homes were sleeping in city parks. In a number of cities, people without homes built their houses from whatever materials they could find. They used empty boxes or pieces of metal to build shelters in open areas.
people called these areas of little temporary houses Hoovervilles. They blamed President Hoover for their situation. So, too, did the men forced to sleep in public parks at night. They covered themselves with pieces of paper, and they called the paper Hoover blankets. People without money in their pants called their empty pockets Hoover flags. People blamed President Hoover because they thought he was not doing enough to help them. Hoover did take several actions to try to improve the economy, but he resisted proposals for the federal government to provide aid in a major way, and he refused to let the government spend more money than it earned. Hoover told the nation, "Economic depression cannot be cured by legislative action or executive decision." Many conservative Americans agreed with him, but not the millions of Americans who were hungry and tired of looking for a job. They accused Hoover of not caring about common citizens. One congressman from Alabama said, "In the White House, we have a man more interested in the money of the rich than in the stomachs of the poor."
On and on, the Great Depression continued. Of course, some Americans were lucky. They kept their jobs, and they had enough money to enjoy the lower prices of most goods. Many people shared their earnings with friends in need. Years later, John Steinbeck wrote, "It seems odd now to say that we rarely had a job. There just weren't any jobs." But he continued, "Given the sea and the gardens, we did pretty well with a minimum of theft. We didn't have to steal much." Farmers could not sell their crops, he explained, so they gave away all the fruit and vegetables that people could carry home.
Other Americans reacted to the crisis by leading protests against the economic policies of the Hoover administration. In 1932, a large group of former soldiers gathered in Washington to demand help. More than 8,000 of them built the nation's largest Hoovervilles near the White House. Federal troops finally removed them by force and burned their shelters.
"Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?"
Next week, we will look at how the Great Depression of the 1930s affected other countries.
"Went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.